You're listening to the Patriots All 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Adam Kirkchen.
This is unequivocally the sweetest.
Well, Adam Kirkchen, I don't think that any of us expected the Patriots to be in this position with a must-win game on Sunday to avoid going 1-3 in the first four games of the season. I mean, we've seen a lot of slow starts from this team in the past, but this one, I think, takes the cake, Peter, for me.
Yeah, to me, the thing that's most concerning was how they lost to the Lions. It wasn't like a fluky kind of loss. When a team runs the ball that easily on you and controls the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and it's not like a great team or anything that does it, it's something that you can see other teams doing. It wasn't fancy. It wasn't, they just sort of ran the ball down their throats and then, move the ball methodically down the field the whole game. When you can't block well and you can't block the other team well, that's never a winning recipe. And that's just the thing that, when I look at, a lot of people would look at the receivers not getting open and stuff like that. But I think, if you can't stop the run, anybody in the league can exploit that. You don't have to have a special team to, run on a bad defense. So I think that's the thing that I looked at and I was like, man, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, they talked a lot today in the locker room, talked to Shaq Mason, and he just talked about how the running game is like imposing your will. And if you can't impose your will, whether it's, stopping the run or getting the run going on the offensive side of the ball, that's just going to make for a long night. In the National Football League, it's a line of scrimmage game. I always say that to people. They want to focus on the quarterbacks and the receivers on the outside. Like you said, a lot of names in fantasy football land, like Antonio Brown or Julio Jones, everyone thinks those are winning football players. No, the winning football players are the guys in the trenches. Those are the guys that really win or lose these games. And, I think it's telling that the Patriots have invested a lot in the trenches because they know it better than about any other team. Bill Belichick knows that games are won and lost at this level in the trenches, and yet they've invested heavily in a lot of different spots, and it hasn't really paid off for them. I mean, they paid Shaq Mason. They traded for Danny Shelton. They've made some moves in the last couple of years to kind of solidify the defensive and offensive line, and so far this year it really hasn't succeeded. And I think that, another thing that the players are all talking about this week is that it's not about necessarily being on the same page, especially defensively. It's not about the fact that there are a ton of busted coverages or a ton of miscommunications. It's that they're in the position that they need to be in, and they just simply can't make the play. And I think that that sign in itself too, because that kind of, not that the players would admit to this, but that kind of speaks to maybe a lack of just talent from 1 to 53, and skill with some of these players. But there was more bad news. if it couldn't get any worse, it kind of did yesterday when Jim McBride of the Boston Globe just dropped a bomb on everybody that both Rex Burkhead and Juwan Bentley were going to injured reserve. And at least for Bentley, it sounds like he's done for the year based off the Instagram post that he put out later in the day yesterday, where he basically thanked Pats Nation for, his rookie season so far, a couple games, and really made it sound like that designated to return tag is not going to be used on him, where the verdict is still out on Burkhead. But let's start with Burkhead and kind of just what impact you see this having on the Patriots offense long term.
Well, I mean, the one thing I will say about that is Burkhead has had trouble staying on the field. So it's not like you're losing a guy that is, plays 16 games every year and is a huge, huge facet. Although the thing about it is it's not as many guys now at an important position where you need depth. This just means you've got to get Sony Michel up to speed quicker.
A lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, it is, and especially this early in his career, there's a lot of pressure on him. I do think You know, even though he hasn't shown a ton yet, I do think there is potential there, and we're eventually going to see it. It's just that this point in the season, at this point in his career, it's really a lot to put on his shoulders.
Yeah, I think that we kind of saw this already without Jeremy Hill, and I don't know if Rex is necessarily this guy either, but they just don't have a power back. They just don't have a guy that when it's third and one and they want to run those heavy packages that they can just hand the ball off to and expect to get a yard or two just without blocking necessarily, that can just run through some people. You know, a guy like a Jeremy Hill would have really fit in nicely, I think, here. And it's a bummer that that ACL injury happened, because they really miss him, I think, or they miss that role. I don't know if it's necessarily him in particular that they need it to be him, but they miss that role. So I wonder, you know, if there is a move at running back that they can make in the trade market over the next couple weeks before the deadline. I think it's going to be difficult for them to find a stud defensive player to come in on the trade market and just have him plug and play and start. But I think that there's a chance that if a running back that has a little bit more size to him and runs with a little bit more power comes available, that maybe they can go that direction. I think that, you know, Georgia made this clear with Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, is that Sony is the scat back. You know, he's the elusive burst guy, speedy guy that can do a couple of different things. They use Nick Chubb as kind of their between the tackles guy that toted the rock, you know, a bunch of times in a game, like 15, 20 times in a game. That wasn't Sony's role. Sony was the change of pace back at Georgia. So yeah. I think that they didn't expect, and I know it's crazy to say that because of how his usage has gone over the last 2 weeks, but I don't think that they really expected him to be the guy that was going to be making those short yardage situations happen and stuff like that. So I think it puts a lot of pressure on Sony. I think it puts a lot of pressure on James White to now not only be a receiver, but also be a running back. And it's going to be interesting to see, I think, moving forward. I mean, I know the team signed Kenyon Barner, who's more of a returner. I think he's going to have a role now at running back just because they're out of necessity. And obviously, they're still hanging on to Ralph Webb on the practice squad. So I don't know if they think that he's too similar maybe to Sony, and they kind of are redundant to have them both on the active roster. But I always find it interesting when they continue to hold on to a player on the practice squad that showed some promise, and then two guys go down at his position and he still doesn't get elevated.
Yeah.
So I wonder what is going on there, but it's interesting. But let's move on to Bentley. I think that, you know, as much as Rex Burkhead was a nice piece for this offense over the last couple of years, Bentley, this one really hurts. Losing a rookie that showed a lot of promise, it looked like Bill Belichick and the scouting department had really found a hidden gem in the fifth round. Three games into his career, he's wearing the green dot. He's playing, you know, middle linebacker for the team and really playing a ton of reps. At times playing over veteran players like Landon Roberts or even Dante Hightower in that role at times. And then goes down with this injury after showing so much promise. Finally, they had a young defensive player showing some potential, and it just doesn't seem like it's working out right now for the Patriots, luck-wise.
Yeah, the thing I liked about Bentley the most is that he really seemed like he understood where to be and when to be there really early in his career. Like, that's like usually a guy that young playing a position that can be cerebral like that doesn't exactly always know where to be. But it seemed like Bentley was like a smart guy who was starting to get it. And I think, you know, I mean, for all the woes and coverage that, you know, the linebackers have had, he had a pick against the Lions or whatever. So, you know, it's he was a promising player, and I still think, you know, he'll have a good career. But like, just the way this year has gone, you know, it seems like every, you know, draft pick has gotten hurt. I mean,
it's crazy.
It's really just it's very unusual, I think, to have it this bad. It's just bad luck. So I had high hopes for him in terms of, you know, what he could become. I thought he was already starting to become a really promising defensive player, I thought. But, you know, especially given how the Lions dominated the Patriots front seven, to lose a guy like that going forward, it's even worse. Because had the Lions not really moved the ball on the ground and sort of, you know, played a 7-on-7 type game and moved the ball that way, then that's one thing. But, you know, the Lions really ran the ball all over the Pats. So you need all the real, you know, physical front seven players you can have. And to lose a guy like Bentley, that's just it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I think that the defense as a whole really struggled just with basic execution and fundamentals in that Lions game up front. Just a lot of guys trying to take on blocks with their hands in the wrong place and their arms up against their bodies instead of extending their hands to shed blockers. And they talked a lot about, you know, just getting back to fundamentals. And this time of year, you would kind of hope that that wouldn't be the concern as much as some of the other stuff. You know, it's one thing to just get beat by a good play or a good player or, you know, someone like that. But that wasn't the problem. They were just getting beat with, you know, sheer power and force. And it's just amazing to me. I think, you know, the whole thing of having two guys in the middle, like Danny Shelton and Malcolm Brown, who are as big as players are these days in the National Football League. Like, you don't get any bigger in the 2018 NFL than Danny Shelton, you know? Like, he's an old school nose tackle, and to see him get moved off the ball time and time again by the Detroit front. And then a lot of the things with the linebackers, you know, they just weren't able to cover up those mistakes. You know, if the guys inside, the DTs, are getting double teams, then it's on the linebackers to get off blocks and at that second level and make tackles. You know, that the Danny Shelton, a lot of the time, as much as he lost ground on a lot of those plays, you know, it's his job to just take on the double team, right, and kind of just occupy blockers. It was the job of the linebackers to then go, and sometimes the safeties coming down too, to then go and be the free guys without blockers on them and make tackles. So it was just a cluster of issues really on the defensive side of the ball with the run defense. And now to lose Bentley, who I really thought was elevating himself to being one of the better players on this team, certainly one of the better linebackers on the team. I mean, I think he might have already been the best linebacker on the team.
Yeah.
And it was 3 weeks into the season. So to see a rookie go down like that, that was playing so well, that it kind of felt like they had finally caught an old school Patriots break, right? Where, like, they caught a guy in the fifth round. They drafted a guy that they identified that no one else knew of, really, and he turned him into a hidden gem. That's kind of what we've seen a lot of the time over the last, you know, 20 years or so of Patriots football under Bill Belichick, is finding the Malcolm Butlers and those types of guys that no one's ever heard of and turning them into stars. It looks like Bentley was headed in that direction. And to kind of have it, you know, the rug pulled from underneath him for this Patriots defense is really difficult. And one last point I just wanted to make was just that today Devin McCourty spoke at the podium, and he said that, you know, it's not a matter of being in the right place. It's about making the play. You know, these guys are all in the right place. It's not that people don't know where they're going on the defense or there's communication breakdowns. Remember last year in the first 4 weeks, it was communication, right? Like, no one, especially Gilmore, was really having trouble knowing where he was supposed to be at on every single play. Now it's not communication, it's execution. And when it starts to become execution is when you start to worry of, does this team actually have enough talent to get where they want to go? And on the defense, I think on the offensive side of the ball, and we're going to talk a ton about the offense, we're not forgetting about the offense with Mark Schofield here in a few minutes, but I think on the defensive side of the ball, it's trending in the direction like they don't have the talent. It might not even be trending. I think it's there. And you know, we've seen this now from the beginning of 2017 to now. So one silver lining, though, is that Trey Flowers does sound like he's going to come back this week. Yeah. And he is an absolute stud. So I think that that will help a lot, getting Trey Flowers back and even getting Patrick Chung back, hopefully, too, who said that he was feeling better today. So hopefully those two guys are back this week. I think that that ended up being a huge factor in the Lions game, was that not having Flowers in that front seven, the Lions just knew that they could manhandle them.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like Flowers is starting to become, you know, like a leader too. When a guy like that goes down, it takes the whole defense. It takes takes something out of the whole defense. So, you know, and Chung is a guy that we've talked about for a long time about being able to serve multiple roles on the defense and for them to be a little bit more versatile. So, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, you can't go down 1-3.
You know? Well, once you do that, I mean, the statistics show that if you go 1-3, it's a near impossibility to make the playoffs.
Right.
Now, the benefit is the Patriots are in the AFC East. So even though Miami's off to a great start and they would be 4-0 if they win this game on Sunday to the Patriots 1-3, there's a chance always that Miami team could implode down the stretch and a 10-6 Patriots team could make the playoffs by winning the AFC East, or maybe even as an AFC wildcard team because the rest of the AFC is not so good either.
No bad.
So it's a weak conference, so I think that they have that going for them, but I mean, you can't lose this game. I think that the Patriots know that. I think, you know, Belichick obviously isn't going to admit that this game's bigger than another game. He did say, you know, it's a big game because it's a divisional game, but he wasn't going to say it was a must win. He wasn't going to say it was a must win because they're 1-2. But I think that the players realize, hey, the buck has to stop now. You know, like, this trend has to stop now, and we have to start winning now. And saying that, like, we need time, we need time, we need time is nice in theory, but they don't have time anymore. You know, it's kind of go time now. So it's going to be a very interesting weekend, that's for sure. And it's going to be even more interesting, and, you know, just from a story standpoint, if they lose on Sunday. The reaction to that is going to be, I hope it doesn't happen, but the reaction to that's going to be incredible. But we're going to get to talking about the offensive side of the ball now with, I think, one of the best offensive guys in the business these days, with Mark Schofield of Inside the Pylon. Here's our interview with Mark. We are joined now by Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon, the go-to guy, I think, for quarterback play in the NFL and in college. So nobody better to have on after a week that we just saw from the Patriots offense than Mark. And Mark, I wanted to start with the number 12, the guy under center, Tom Brady. What are you seeing from Brady, and do you think that any of this is to blame on the quarterback, I guess?
Well, guys, first of all, it's great to be back with you, and I know this is going to be a fun little commiseration session given what we've seen over the past couple of weeks. And, you know, as for Brady, I don't think he's blameless. I mean, I think if you look at some of the opportunities that they have had in the passing game, you can go back to, you know, he had a throw to Burkhead in the red zone against Houston that he missed. He had a similar throw to Burkhead against Jacksonville that he missed. You look at the start to that Detroit game, and they had two opportunities on third down situations to extend drives early in that game that he missed on. He had, you know, Hogan on a dig route. The throw was late. The throw was behind him. The throw was off target. He had Dorsett in a similar situation. Throw was there for him to make it, and he missed it. And so he certainly missed some throws. But I think there's blame to go all around, whether it's from the coaching staff, the front office, on down, for how this offense has struggled to this point. They can't get off the field on third downs. I mean, they can't stay on the field on third down situations. Brady's missed some throws, to be sure, but there have also been some scheme things that they could have done. There's been some opportunities that he wasn't looking at. You know, there was a potential throw that he could have made against Jacksonville on a third down situation that he didn't look to. He looked to the other side of the field on that opening drive. And so I think there's a struggle for guys to get open, a struggle for guys not named Gronkowski to get separation. And there's probably been some stuff that Josh McDaniels could do differently that we can talk about. So I think there's blame all around, and I think 12 shares some of it.
Go ahead, Adam.
I just got a question. You know, I know you, one of the things I like most about your breakdowns is the mechanics. And I remember when I was covering a few years ago, when they were in that AFC Championship game against the Broncos, and he was being hit every time he dropped back to pass. And it seemed like, you know, I sort of asked him after the game, you know, does your internal clock start to affect your mechanics? Do you see any of that with him as far as, you know, a lack of confidence either in his receivers or his offensive line starting to affect his footwork? You know, how he's getting the ball out of his hands, any of that?
I mean, I think there is, Adam, an internal clock issue going on. You look back at, you know, for example, that opening drive against Detroit. I feel like he thought the pocket was collapsing on him more than it was. And so that he started to drop his eyes, move his feet, and drop the ball down a little bit, like he was getting into sort of fight or flight mode when it was basically a clean pocket. And so I think there is some of that at work here. You look back at the Jacksonville game, that opening drive where they had to settle for the field goal try, which Gostkowski missed. You know, that third and short play where he kind of threw it quickly to Hogan. There was pressure, sure, but I think he still had time to sort of step and make a throw. I think we are sort of seeing that internal clock, like you said, get sped up in his mind a little bit, whether that's, you know, because he's been getting hit at times, whether that's because he's feeling things in the pocket or what, I don't know. But I think we're seeing it.
I think we saw, I've seen a little bit of, and Greg Bedard pointed this out as well, Boston Sports Journal. He's kind of, that front foot kind of points to the sideline sometimes instead of staying square when he feels that pressure, and he doesn't like trust his offensive line to step into his throws as much. And that's something that I have noticed as well with Tom. And I think that, you know, it's obvious to me that his skills aren't diminishing. Like, I don't think that this is him falling off a cliff. I think this is him not trusting the other 10 guys around him. And therefore, you know, the pressure seems like it's coming early. In that Jacksonville game, I mean, he was under siege. Like, there were just times where you could just tell that, you know, he knew that if he didn't get the ball out in 2 to 2.5 seconds, then he was going to get sacked. And it wasn't just going to be a sack. It was probably going to be a strip sack because they're so good at getting the ball out.
And they got to him once, yeah.
Yeah, and that's ended up being what happened. So I kind of put some of the blame on him because, you know, and he said it himself, and this is, you know, kind of why I wanted to bring this up with you, Mark, is that, you know, in order for this team to be great, they need a great quarterback, and they need the quarterback to play like an MVP. He knows that as well as everybody, that if they're going to win a Super Bowl or come close to winning a Super Bowl again, then he needs to be the MVP. I mean, that needs to be the way that things are. And right now, I wrote about it, you know, early in the week, I just don't feel like he's playing like an MVP. Now, I don't think that he can't return to that status. And I think that having hopefully Josh Gordon out there this week or the next week and Julian Edelman back, obviously, after this week, that is definitely going to help. But I think that, you know, we'll get to some of the other points here in a second. But I think that for Brady, you know, they need him to be better, whether it's fair or not, you know, whether right. You know, it's all his fault or not. They need him to play better for this team to start winning again. And I think that he knows that just as well as anybody. And it's, you know, nice to hear the other 52 guys in the locker room, you know, take their responsibility on their shoulders too. But at the same time, you know, we all know that it's going to start with the quarterback. But I want to hit on now the tight end that has kind of disappeared at times in these games. And I did a breakdown of him too, of Gronk we're talking about, of course, of, you know, there's just a lot of guys around him all the time, it seems like right now. But I think that, you know, the big topic of discussion, and Michael Lombardi, old Patriots executive, kind of stirred the pot on this one, Mark, is, you know, has he lost a step? Is he not as explosive or as dangerous as he once was?
I mean, I think you can make that argument, and Lombardi certainly does, that he doesn't have that sort of ability to – I mean, remember the Gronk in his prime where you put a linebacker on him, forget it. He was going to run away from him. You put a safety on him, he was going to run away from him. You know, and then sometimes you would see him flexed outside and you get – corners on him, and he's going to be able to either, if not run away from them, then at least use his physicality, his size, his frame to get himself open. We're not seeing that as much. Now, you know, to what you wrote and what others have talked about, you know, he is seeing his share of not on, if not full on double teams where it's a legitimate double, some bracket situations where they're going in and out on him, they're going high, low on him, where, you know, maybe he gets separation from the first guy, but because there's that extra help over the top or to the inside or to the outside, Brady can't pull the trigger because you're asking Tom Brady then to do hero things. And that is, you know, to the point you were sort of concluded on, Evan, to touch on that for a second. The way this team is constructed right now, offensive and defensively, they are asking Tom Brady to do Tom Brady hero type things to win games. And if he can't do it, whether it's guys not getting separation and him not making throws or a combination thereof, they're not going to win right now. So I just wanted to hit that for a second. But back to Gronk. I do think that there is evidence that, you know, if he's doubled, maybe he can get separation on one guy, but he can't get separation from both. If he's in true man coverage situations, there are times where he's not getting the type of separation we're used to seeing him get on these routes. Now, there has been the ankle issue you know, and I know that they said that that wasn't an issue, but it's been heavily taped at times. He's been on and off the injury report. I don't know if he's a little bit hobbled and that's causing a lack of explosiveness, but it does seem like it's not the Rob Gronkowski we're used to seeing.
Yeah, it seems to me that, you know, there's obviously the element to it that he's getting so much attention and teams can get away with that right now. There's not that other guy that can really hurt you. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the players that were talked about before the season, you know, who could step it up in Edelman's absence just haven't. But yeah, you know, the whole thing with Gronkowski in the first place, you know, in becoming the player that he was that it really didn't matter who you threw at him. And now it, you know, it seems like teams can really scheme for him. But I do think this is not going to be like a season long thing. Like, I feel like I feel like he will, you know, at least get back to a point where he's, you know, a major weapon. Again, I just don't think this, you know, he'll be, this contained for an entire season. So, you know, obviously Edelman coming back is going to help. I want to see what, you know, I really don't know what to expect whatsoever with Gordon, obviously. But I can only assume it'll make it a little better. But yeah, it's one of those things. It's sometimes it's hard for me to make a judgment this early in the season about how effective a player is physically. Yeah, usually I need to see a little bit more evidence, but it's going to be interesting to see. I think, you know, once Edelman comes back, you're going to see, you know, just a little bit of a freeing up for him.
I think, yeah, I think one of the things that Lombardi said, and I think that we all are in agreement, is that Gronk is a builder of speed now. He's not a guy that accelerates from 0 to 60 very quickly. And what I kind of tried to highlight in that breakdown was that a lot of teams are making sure that he can't build up speed. So they're putting guys right on him on the line of scrimmage, and then they're putting a safety over the top. And what's happening is that Gronk's got somebody in his face right away, and that makes him slow down. And there's no place for him to go after that. And because he doesn't necessarily have quite the same agility or explosiveness, I would say, that he had, you know, in his rookie season. Obviously, it's been 8 years of NFL football. I don't think that that's going to be – that's that crazy to think that it would diminish, especially for a player that's in line so much like he is and taking so much punishment. So I think that one of the problems for him right now is that they're – playing for him to know that he's kind of like a runaway freight train, right? Like, what if you get out of his way and you let him build up that speed, then no one's going to stop him. But if you get in his face and you make sure that he can't build up speed, then he kind of, you know, has issues. And one of the things that was interesting, I did that piece about Jalen Ramsey, his smack talk with Gronk and all that stuff leading up to the Jaguars game. And I talked to the corners on the Patriots about what it's like to cover Gronk in practice. And Eric Rowe told me that he's not fast. He said, you know, he just point blank said to me that he's not fast and he's not running away from me anytime. That's not the issue. The issue with covering Gronk is that he's so big and that his catch radius is insane and that him and Tom are on such a same wavelength that it's very difficult with the ball placement and Gronk's size to defend it. So I think that, you know, my final point is just that, and I think that some of this is because they're kind of managing it at this point in the season where they don't want to just get, you know, Gronk susceptible to being hit. But some of it is that Brady needs to just realize that sometimes Gronk is open when he doesn't look open.
Right.
And you got to just force the ball into him. And he did it on that throw to the touchdown catch against Houston, where he had the safety was coming over and it basically had a double team on Gronk and it just didn't develop quick enough for Houston to stop him. And he threw the back shoulder, Gronk turned his body, boxed the guy out, and he caught the ball for a touchdown. It didn't really look like he was open, but, you know, those are the types of plays that I think that we need to see from Gronk. And I think that, you know, we're going to touch on the receivers here in a second. So I think that, you know, Edelman and Gordon will definitely help. But, Mark, I wanted to segue here into the receivers. What are you seeing with them? I think we can all tell, you know, any Patriots fan can tell that they're not getting open enough. I mean, yeah. I don't think that that's, you know, a big realization. But in terms of like running the offense the proper way, being in the right spot and stuff like that, I thought on Sunday against the Lions, especially for obviously for Cordarrelle Patterson, that has been a big issue. What have you seen?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think – you know, what we're seeing is an inability to get separation. We're also seeing, and I know we're going to talk about Josh McDaniels in a bit, but I don't think that they're doing enough in terms of moving guys around, stack slots, bunch hooks, to get guys some releases, so to get guys into routes where they have got some separation to begin with, whether it's getting Dorsett some space off the line, getting Hogan some free release looks off the line, Patterson, whoever you want to think about, because – you know, these guys right now, there, since they can't get separation, you give them help. It's like when Julian Edelman was first sort of really becoming the wide receiver, the focal point of this offense, they would give him some stack slot looks. They would give him some motions, some short motions, things like that to get him a free release, to get him into his route so he's got some separation to then build off of and not start it in the face of a jam or start it in the face of press coverage. And I think that's what we need to do right now with these guys. And you know, I think the route concepts, the structures and things like that, for the most part, there's variety there. You're not seeing a lot of the same stuff. They do a lot of vertical stuff, which I'm surprised at given the guys that they have right now. I mean, I don't think Dorsett's a speed burner type. I don't think Hogan's a guy that's going to get you stuff like that. Patterson, maybe to some extent, but it does seem like they need sort of a vertical threat to run the stuff that they're running, whether it's in the red zone or all over the field. But I do think that that's something that they need to do. They need to get these guys freed up at the line of scrimmage because they don't have the ability right now to free themselves up into and out of their breaks on route concepts.
Yeah, the way I look at it is with the amount of attention being paid to Gronkowski, there's so much man coverage, teams just aren't afraid to stick one guy on another guy, and they feel like they can have success, and they have. And, I agree, like there's some scheme things you can do to help with that. But, you look at that and you say, it shouldn't really be this hard to get open when you're one-on-one with another player. And you wonder how much of that, is Brady looking at a guy and saying, all right, well, I don't really trust this guy's going to make the play. When he made that comment about James White, he knows that when he throws to James White, he's going to make a play. You know, he's proven it over the years. There's fewer guys on the field right now who are like that for him, especially when a guy like Gronkowski is being taken away so much. So I think that's an issue. But, it's another one of those things where, like, you just look at it and you're like, look, man, if all these guys have man coverage, somebody's got to be open. It really shouldn't be this bad.
Yeah, I think that this is a really good segue into Josh McDaniels, because I think that from my perspective, these receivers, Chris Hogan, Cordarrelle Patterson, Philip Dorsett, they're not guys that you can expect to separate down to down on their own. And right now, I'm just not seeing enough schemed open situations that we're accustomed to seeing. So it's really weird that it's not happening as much as it should. And I think that what, Mark, you were saying about kind of helping them get separation with the setup of the route is really a great point, because, you know, there's situations where you can help a guy get leverage. You can help a guy get, open just from alignment and just from, where his pre-snap motion is, stuff like that. And against the Lions, they just ran basically 11 personnel a lot of the time. They just ran three wide receivers out there, and they expected, Cordarrelle to run a post, Dorsett to run a dig, and Chris Hogan to run something from the slot and just get open. And there was just no variety or creativity, I guess is the better word. There was no creativity to helping those guys get open. It was mainly just, all right, we know they're going to double Gronk, so other guys, you guys are on islands, get open. And I don't think that these guys are capable of doing it. And it's interesting because against Houston, they did that touchdown that they threw to Dorsett was a bunch stack formation where they got him leverage and they got him into a situation where all he had to do was put a little wiggle at the top of the route and he was open and Brady could hit him with the pass touchdown. That hasn't happened the last 2 weeks. I think a lot of the credit, especially in Jacksonville, goes to that defense. But even against Jacksonville, it was too vanilla. It was just too vanilla, and they had some really good creative play calls, I thought, early in that game, like the wheel route to Jacob Hollister, for example. The play that Brady should have hit on the third down was a nice play call that they just unfortunately didn't pick up the pressure, and Brady wasn't able to get the ball to Patterson. But then all of a sudden, it felt like, after maybe, 10 to 15 offensive plays in the first quarter, that all just disappeared. They haven't thrown nearly enough screen passes to the running backs and to Patterson. I mean, that's when they threw one screen the entire game against Detroit.
Yeah.
One screen to Rex Burkhead, and it gained 19 yards. And when you have this personnel where James White, Cordarrelle Patterson, obviously Sony Michel, who we'll talk about in a little bit too, you know, those are the guys that are on the team right now that, you know, are going to give you, you know, big plays. And obviously Gronk too. Those are the guys that you need to be able to scheme open. And Mark, I think you kind of were hinting at this. I put a lot of the blame for not putting the players in the best position to succeed on the coaching staff and on McDaniels.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, you know, I think to your point about the screen game, Evan, and it's a great one, and it's an opportunity to talk about this week that's ahead of us, because you look at the Miami Dolphins right now, you look at the construction of their defensive roster, and you've got at that second level, you've got Kiko Alonso, who's a veteran player, but he's not the most athletic linebacker out there. And then you've got Jerome Baker, Raekwon McMillan, who are young, athletic, but dumb. You know, they need some reps to sort of learn how to play the linebacker position in the National Football League. I mean, McMillan's a second-year player, but he lost all of last year due to injury. Baker's a rookie. The matchup to watch this week is that running back group of New England, Michelle and White, against those guys. They need to.
You read my mind. This is what I'm writing about tomorrow.
There you go, man. I look forward to reading it. It's what I'm going to be talking about in tomorrow's Locked On Patriots, because, you know, you've got to get isolate Alonzo in man coverage situations. You've got to get those guys isolated man coverage situations, and you need to do stuff in the screen game. You look at what the Raiders did. They were running a lot of running back screens type stuff. Even if it's just one, they had one play where it's Rashard in the center, and that was it in a screen. And they got, you know, the center blocking on the second level against Alonzo. It went for an easy gain of 9 and a first down. And so that's what they need to do. They need to get the running backs involved better than they have been in the passing game. And, you know, to McDaniels, there have been times when he's gone like D slant and he's created some rub concepts. You know, they did it on that throw to White against Jacksonville, that third down late in the game. It looked to be a first down and it wasn't. Jacksonville just read it well. They had the guy go over the top instead of trying to come underneath. So he beat the rub. You know, that first third down of the game against Jacksonville, where he had that throw that he kind of threw away to Hogan before the field goal try. They had the same look on the other side with White and Patterson, and it was open. Patterson was open on that slant route. Brady just didn't look to him. So McDaniels has done some of it, but I don't think he's done enough. And we need to see more of this scheming guys open until, you know, we get Edelman back. We see something from Gordon, because right now these guys do need some help. And for this week against Miami, they need to, you know, work on those linebackers.
Yeah. It's funny when you brought that up, Evan, because I'm like, when was the last time we talked about the Patriots not running enough screens, you know, because it's such a huge part of their offense. I remember when they drafted Isaiah Wynn, and one of the first things that came to mind is, how does this guy block when there's a screen pass? How does he block against moving targets at the second and third level? And so it's such a huge part of their game. And I agree. And it's also like, when was the last time you looked at Miami and they said they had a great linebacking core, you know? It's like
Zach Thomas and those guys.
Yeah, it's been a while. So that would be the perfect thing. I agree. That's a great point to bring up. And, you know, it's another thing too, is that, you know, I'd also kind of like to see more of these wide receiver screens and stuff like that, especially with a guy like Patterson. I know he's a little bit unreliable at this point, but that's one easy way to get him the ball. That's like what he's best at, is, you know, just get it to him in space and see if he can make moves after the catch. Like that seems to me like something that I thought we'd see a lot more of. Maybe there's something in practice that he's not doing right that is keeping them from doing that. That's one of the things I always think about when I say, well, why aren't they doing this? Well, maybe this guy just isn't as good at doing it as we think he is. So, but when they picked him up, I thought that was going to be like a significant part of his role on the offense, was like just a quick hitch or a screen or something, get the ball in his hands and watch him work, because that's what he's best at. So, and we talked about this at the beginning of the season too, about the guys that were out, about one of the things that McDaniels is best at is just being creative. Like, well, you know, thank God they have McDaniels, because, you know, he's the one who can, he likes being creative when, you know, he's forced with a challenge. And it is a little surprising to see, you know, this type of sort of more vanilla look. But But yeah, like the screen game is such a huge, huge part of this offense every year. I think, you know, that's something they would figure out, you know, for this game too, like Mark said.
Yeah, I had to go back again and rewatch all of Brady's throws because I only charted one screen pass the first time. And I was like, did they really only run one screen with this personnel? I mean, I couldn't believe it. And you go back to that scoring drive against Jacksonville in the fourth quarter. And I know it was late in the game and maybe the Jaguars were kind of letting up a little bit, but they ran a screen to Cordrell that gained almost 20 yards. Then they tried to run another one, and Brady threw it away because the Jaguars blew it up. And then they ran the fake screen on the Hogan touchdown, and Hogan was wide open, and he scored the touchdown over the middle. Those are the kind of setups that they need to use. You know, that was a perfectly set up sequence of plays by Josh McDaniels, right? Screen to the right, screen to the left. Okay, it doesn't work. It doesn't matter. It's still the action of it. And then fake screen to the left, throw, you know, quick throw over the middle, touchdown. You know, that's coordinating at its best. That's play calling at its best. And I just would like to see McDaniels return to that. But before we moved on to Sony Michel, I just wanted to mention one more thing. We were talking about this today down at Gillette. When's the last time that this team did not have a go-to slot receiver? Because right now, you know, that's where we're at. And I think that a huge part of the reason why this offense is not clicking is because that's the pivot position of the Patriots offense, is having a productive slot receiver. And it's no disrespect to Chris Hogan, because I think that he's a fine player, but he's not a full-time slot. That's just never been his role. And it's never going to be his role. So maybe this is a question of, like, you know, more of the offseason decisions. I mentioned Braxton Berrios. I don't know if as a rookie he was really going to be that guy. It's not so much of necessarily that they didn't pay Danny Amendola, but they didn't go out and get a backup slot receiver in case Julian Edelman was – well, they didn't know he was going to be suspended, but you could have probably factored in that he was probably going to miss a few games because of injury. So, you know, either way, you had to have planned for that, and maybe Berrios was the guy that they thought was going to be able to play right away as a rookie. I just find it hard to believe that they thought that, you know, he was going to be able to do that instantly. But, Mark, I mean – just the importance of the slot receiver role and the fact that they don't have one, I think right now, is just killing them.
Yeah, because it's such a pivotal aspect to this offense. And it's not an easy position to play because there's so much involved that goes into it, from the route conversions and the reads. And, you know, one of the staple New England plays, Hoss-wide juke, where you've got that slot receiver that's making that read on that juke route over the middle. And it's supposed to be that sort of quick outlet for Brady if he doesn't like what he sees to either side. You know, you've got that route to go to. And, you know, Hogan did make a nice play against Detroit on that design, but that's not his role. I mean, and it's a new, unfamiliar position for him, so there's an adjustment period to be expected. You know, I do expect that when they get Edelman back that there will be, you know, a much more efficient offense, because you'll have at least that position where Brady knows, okay, if I don't like what I like to, you know, if I don't like what I'm seeing on the outside, I've got that slot role. It's Edelman. I know where he's going to be. You know, we've been doing this for years now, so I trust him. He doesn't have that level of trust in the same guys, you know, Dorsett and Hogan, trying to fill that role, because it's unfamiliar for them and it's to be expected. And, you know, to the point about Berrios, you know, I was all aboard the Braxton Berrios train and it just didn't pan out. And, you know, maybe like you said, Evan, they were hoping that he would fill that role. He didn't, you know, and we can get into a discussion about, you know, what the front office, how they handled that position. But, you know, it's costing them right now because they need somebody in that position. With Edelman suspended, they don't have it.
Yeah, I think that it was that position. I mean, I know a lot of people want to talk about the fact that they didn't draft a defensive player early and they didn't, you know, do enough to help the defensive side of the ball. Not getting Edelman insurance, and maybe it was Berrios, but not really focusing hard on getting Edelman insurance. I mean, I went back and, you know, when you really think about it, they've had two guys in that position for basically this entire run, whether it was Troy Brown or Deion Branch and then Wes Welker. And then, you know, the last couple of years, it's been Edelman and Amendola. It's been both guys, because they knew that both guys could get beat up with that, you know, playing inside and taking a lot of hits. So they had two of them, and they made sure that one of them was healthy most of the time. And obviously Amendola last year, they really kind of, you know, managed his snaps, especially, you know, in the middle of the regular season, to make sure that they had him in the playoffs, because they knew how important that slot position was. And I think that that's, you know, just been something that, because they have a lot of other holes elsewhere, and they know Edelman's coming back, But it also speaks to the fact that, you know, when Edelman comes back, I think it's going to make a gigantic difference just to have him as a competent player. Even if he's not pre-ACL Edelman right away, even if he's not the 2015, 2016 version, he's a little bit slower. Just having a guy that's competent in that role and being able to move Chris Hogan into more of a role that he's accustomed to, I think is really going to be huge. Adam, do you have a point on that?
Yeah, I was also a huge Berrios guy, just from watching him when he was at Miami. He was such a dependable guy. It seemed like he was like, I know everybody were, or at least a lot of people were hoping the Patriots were going to draft him, and he just seemed like he'd be a great fit. But your point about having two slot guys is an important one. Like you said, just for the, you know, how many hits those guys take, how many big hits they take over the middle of the field. It's tough. And, you know, and it's one of those things too, like, you know, like you hinted at a little bit at the end there, you know, we'll have a really much better way to judge this offense once Edelman comes back. You know, like he's somebody that is, at the very least, you know, I don't, you know, care how beat up he is, he's somebody who Brady trusts, you know, yeah, a lot. So having that guy who Brady has ultimate trust in on the field counts for so much more than I think people can even quantify. So, I think it is one of those, you know, things that the front office thought maybe Berrios could come in and be that guy right away, even though I think that's a bit of a wishful thinking thing. I think Berrios was somebody who I thought, if he was going to be successful, was going to be a 2 or 3 year down the line type guy, because it takes a while sometimes. But yeah, I think, you know, I've sort of held all along that, you know, I think like a lot of people, like when Edelman comes back and the offense is still struggling, then you can really sort of hit the panic button.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We want to get your impressions of Sony Michel, Mark, because both Adam and I are huge fans. I've been on the Sony Michel, you know, train since his Georgia days. And obviously, it's just not off to a good start right now. Do you think, you know, what have you seen from Sony, I guess? How much do you put on the blocking? I still think that the blocking has just not been good enough for him. And I think the team would agree. But, you know, do you think that he is still as explosive as he was in college, or do you think that he's taken a step back?
I mean, I think he's the same player that he was in college. I mean, I think that the problem was twofold. I think on a lot of the plays, a lot of the runs, the third and shorts, third and ones, whatever, the blocking up front was a letdown, whether it's Shaq Mason getting blown into the backfield, whether it's Dwayne Allen failing to get to the second level when he's supposed to. And then, you know, you see them having to make adjustments on using him in pre-snap motion to try to run the same exact play. The blocking hasn't been there. But I also think that, Evan, this is something you touched on this week on Twitter that I saw, and there's a predictability problem here with Sony Michel and his usage. You look at that game against Detroit, he has 15 carries, 14 of them. Brady's under center, he's the single back. You know, there's that issue to it, where it's, you see him on the field, you see that formation, you expect him to get the ball, expect it to be a handoff. Then there's the fact that he's getting the ball 72% of the time when he's on the field, like you pointed out. So even if it's in the passing game, it seems like they're trying to feed him touches, which maybe that's a sign of how they feel he can contribute, but it's also pretty easy as a defense to figure out what's going on given where he lines up. If he's in the backfield, he's getting the ball. If he's split out wide, they're going to try to throw him the ball. That's a thing that they need to fix, because if a defense can simply say, because of alignment, where he is on the field and the fact that he's in the game, what the play is going to be, that's a problem, and they need to fix that. Yeah. I think if they do, Sony Michel is going to be fine. It's clear that they trust him. It's clear that they think a lot of him, because I'm surprised at the workload that he's been getting, given the fact that as a running back in this offense, you are tasked with a lot, from the pass game to the pass pro game to carrying the football itself. And the fact that they trust him to this point, they think the world of him. They just got to figure out the usage and balance the predictability to what the offense looks like right now.
Yeah, when they run with so much with him under center, it makes me feel like he's like LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, you know, he's not.
They had LeGarrette Blount, and all they would do when he was in the game was power run. And Sony is not that. He was not that at Georgia, and he wasn't that going to be that at the NFL level. He's a scat back. You know, he's an elusive guy, a very fast guy, and you got to have to get him into space and watch him run. And that's, you know, having him run from under center all the time against these loaded boxes, I just don't see how that is, using his skills to the best of their abilities. I would much rather see them run him out of shotgun, because then they can spread out the defense. You get a 5 or 6 man box, a light box, and then you can watch him make some moves in space and stuff like that. There's no place for him to go on some of these runs, and there, some of it is definitely on him to do some little things better. I think he's a little bit tentative right now to where his blocking is going to be, and kind of still learning the blocking schemes and kind of the timing of the Patriots offense and everything. And also, I don't know, this is just a theory, but I kind of think the fumbling thing's in the back of his head a little bit. I think that he knows that if he puts the ball on the ground, that he's going to go in the Belichick doghouse and he's never going to see the field again. I mean, I think he'll see the field again because they've invested too much in him to, completely bench him for fumbling. But, if you fumble in a big spot in a big game, you're not getting back in that game. That's just how the Patriots operate. So I think there's a little bit of tentativeness and a little bit of fumble, worry in his game as well. But biggest thing for me, I just think running from him from under center, unless you're really going to block well from him up front, he's 215 pounds. He's not 250 pounds where he's going to be running over guys at the line of scrimmage. I would just much rather see them run him out of shotgun and then get him into some situations where he's not facing so many loaded boxes.
Mark, I got a quick question for you, because we talked about this, I think either a couple weeks ago or last week when it came to Sony. And I tried to find the quote after the fact, but I know I heard it somewhere from Reggie Bush about the biggest adjustment from college to the pros is that when he was at USC, and obviously it was like one of those all-time lines at USC, it actually hurt him when he got to the pro level that the blocking was so good in college because he didn't necessarily hit the hole as fast. And, you obviously watch a lot of college football during the year and during the draft and all that stuff. How much do you think that might be an issue for Sony? Because he was also somebody who, you look at some of those highlights and it's you're driving a tractor trailer through those holes.
Yeah, no, I think it's a huge, component to it, Adam, and it's a great point, and it ties in with a lot of what, Evan was just talking about, because part of the adjustment as a rookie running back is, what's a hole in college is vastly different from what's a hole in the National Football League. And sometimes a hole in the NFL that you're expected to run through is the size of a dining room chair. That's how big it is. But that's the crease you've got to find. You've got to get small. You've got to get thin and get through it and get to that second level. And it's an adjustment period for training your eyes to realize that that's the crease that you go to attack here. And that's part of the timing up of, his decisions, his cuts, his reads, when it's a zone blocking scheme where, okay, this is a hole that I've got to get through now. And now I know that, okay, coach, that's what I've got to do next time we run this play. So I think you'll get there. But Adam, I think it's a great point, and it does tie in with a lot of what Evan was just talking about with timing up his footwork and his reads and his decisions with the holes that he's now asked to run through at the National Football League level.
Yeah, I think getting skinny has been an issue for him. And that's kind of like one of those running back things that, there's football terms or whatever you want to call it. But I showed a play on Twitter where there was a hole there. There was a crease, and he ends up actually running into the back of James Devlin because he didn't quite get skinny enough to squeak through it. And, I hate to do this, but I thought to myself when I watched it, I was like, Deion Lewis would have gotten through that hole. Deion Lewis is gaining 15 yards on that run. Because Deion would have gotten small. He would have, made himself, he's already tiny, and he would have made himself even smaller, jumped through the hole, and then gotten to the second level. I think that Sony still has a chance to get there, but Adam brought this up last week, and it's an awesome point. Just like when you watch those highlights, and they ran a ton of outside zone at Georgia too. I mean, it's just like there's massive, massive holes.
Yeah.
And it's great to see Sony's explosion and see how quickly he gets to the second level and how his breakaway speed and all that type of stuff that we talk about during the draft. But if you're not making those types of holes for him, which you're not going to be much of the time in the NFL, the running back has to then adjust and figure out, where he's supposed to go. All right. Mark, thank you a lot for staying on with us for this long.
Of course, guys.
But we have one more question we wanted to ask you about, because we really haven't talk too much about the Dolphins because there's so much crap going on with the Patriots right now.
There's a lot.
The matchup with the Dolphins is really just like, for everybody, I think, was kind of getting swept under the rug while we deal with all the problems. But Ryan Tannehill, the Dolphins quarterback, has won 10 out of his last 11 starts that he's been healthy for. That he's really starting to play some really good football. What have you seen from Tannehill, and do you think that he's kind of taken that next step to being an upper echelon QB?
You know, Evan, I think he's kind of in that direction. I don't know if he's fully taken that next step. I think, you know, Hems and his fit in Adam Gase's offense, I think is a good one. You know, we all know that Gase does so much with crossers and shallow routes and stuff like that, which has been keeping me up all week trying to think of this defense defending yet more shallow crossing routes. It's almost nightmarish. But, you know, Tannehill is a good fit for that. Guys like Wilson and Amendola, obviously, and even to an extent, Kenny Stills, they're good fits for this pass game. So the pass game is really sort of clicking right now. You look at any sort of statistic or metric, whether it's adjusted net yards per attempt, completion percentage, whatever, Tannehill is a top five quarterback right now. But that being said, there are still some issues with him that, you know, give him trouble. Pressure still gives him trouble, whether it's a blitz, whether it's just a free rusher. There are times when he seems panicky in the face of pressure. He had a strange little fumble against the Jets in week two, where he just almost seems to just like drop the ball because he's got a free rusher in his lap, you know, immediately after the snap, and he seems to be panicky there. His decision-making process, while it's been pretty good this year, there are times when it is slow. Again, particularly if he faces a blitz, if he faces pressure, he almost seems to slow himself down rather than what you expect, which is to speed your process up. And so I think there's an opportunity for New England on Sunday, if they get pressure on him, that they can, you know, force him into some mistakes, force him into some slow decisions, and then maybe he makes an errant throw. That being said, it also starts with getting pressure on him, which is something New England has struggled to do this season, whether it's with four or trying to bring a blitz, whether it's on the inside or off the edge. Sometimes they aren't getting home, and then you're forced defending those crossing routes, which has given them fits all year long. And so I think he's trending in the right direction. Obviously, winning 10 out of his last 11 starts is impressive, but there are still some things he needs to clean up as a quarterback that gives New England a chance to perhaps capitalize and force some mistakes on Sunday.
Yeah, I've been most impressed. I mean, first of all, that was an awesome breakdown. but I've been most impressed from the tape that I've seen of him, kind of over, you know, before even his injury. His downfield accuracy, I think, has gotten a lot better. His downfield ball placement on deep passes, especially that throw that he had to Kenny Stills against Oakland, was a perfect throw. Yeah. You don't throw that throw any better than that. So that was pretty impressive. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that some of the pressure stuff is still some of the stuff at the line of scrimmage. I'm not sure that he's like quite there on like a Brady, Breeze, you know, Rodgers type level with that kind of stuff. But you know, in terms of just this, the throwing skills and you know, the stuff like that, and when you give him clean pockets, you know, he definitely can be lethal. And yeah, this offense in terms of what they have. I mean, the Patriots players don't like to hear that a lot of reporters have been like, Dolphins are really fast. And the Patriots defenders are like, don't tell me that. Like, you know, we're fast too. And, you know, stuff like that. It's going to be really interesting to see. And I think that Gase has done a really excellent job with his creative play calling, the things that he's been doing. Those tap passes on the jet sweeps and stuff like that have really killed teams. That's a really nice little wrinkle that he's added this year into the offense. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. But I think this is another, you know, I wrote before the Lions game that the Lions had the personnel to really carve up the Patriots. I didn't think it was going to be on the ground, as I missed there, but you know, I knew that they were probably going to be able to move the ball. I think this Dolphins team has, you know, a lot of the personnel to move the ball, and the Patriots as well, from attacking the defense horizontally. So I think the Patriots know it. It's just going to be a matter of if they can stop it, you know, if they have the personnel to stop it, because they're going to be game planning for it. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens on Sunday. All right, Mark, thanks so much again for coming on. Plug away. What do you got coming up and want people to go out and check out?
Well, thanks, Evan and Adam, for having me on. It's always great to be chatting with you guys and, you know, catching up on the Pats and things like that. As for me, best way to find me is at Mark Schofield on Twitter, Inside the Pylon, The Score, Pro Football Weekly, Matt Walden's Rookie Scouting Portfolio, Big Blue View, part of the SB Nation family of websites, and yes, Locked On Patriots, where I commiserate with Patriots fans 5 days a week about the state of all things New England Patriots. But guys, again, thanks so much for having me on. It's been a blast.
Thanks once again to Mark Schofield of Inside the Pylon for coming on with us. Adam, before Patriots Dolphins, I was about to say Lions. We've already played that one. Before Patriots Dolphins on Sunday, what do you have going on with Mass Varsity? I'm sure there's some college games this weekend you'll be looking at.
Yeah, I'm going to be attending the URI at Harvard game. URI is nationally ranked in the FCS. They nearly beat UConn a couple weeks ago. They got a great wide receiving core, and they do a good job of recruiting Massachusetts. And Harvard is looking much better than last year when they went 5-5. I saw them a couple weeks ago when they beat San Diego, and they got some legit players on that team, and maybe even an NFL player or two. So it'll be a fun take Friday night.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds great. And these college teams, I've been checking out a lot more college football this year to try to stay up, especially for the draft and stuff like that. And it's been a great college football season so far. Pretty lights out. So that's cool. All right. For CLNS Media, go check out my piece with Kyle Van Noy. He said a lot of really interesting things that I thought. Kind of telling people to just be patient with the defense. He thinks that they're coming along, and he said something along the lines of, I know people don't think we have talent, but we do. So yeah. So I'll see if that, he can put his money where his mouth is on Sunday with that one. So go check that out. My Patriots game plan will be up on Friday. I'm going to focus that on the Patriots offense and trying to correct some things and get things pointed in the right direction. I kind of expect the Dolphins to play a lot of man coverage in this game, like they did in that week 14 game down in Miami where they won. Dude, Tom Brady actually has a 14-1 record against the Dolphins at Gillette Stadium. I saw that stat for the first time today, and I couldn't believe it. So a lot of the losses for him have actually come in Miami. But that game in Miami last year, they played a lot of man coverage, especially on third down, and they were really able to take the Patriots out of their game. So I'd expect to see a lot of that too. So the game plan is kind of focused on, how they can beat that. Obviously, having Gronk in this game will be a big difference for the Patriots from that Monday night or last year. So go check that out. And we'll be at the game on Sunday. So make sure you check out all the game day stuff. We'll have a pregame show, car ride over, Periscope, and then obviously a bunch of stuff after the game as well. And then a quick turnaround for the Pats and for us, Adam. They play on Thursday night next week against the Indianapolis Colts, the Andrew Luck-led Indianapolis Colts this time. So it'll be very interesting to see kind of where Luck is, where that shoulder is, and some of the things that that Frank Reich, the Eagles' old offensive coordinator that's now the head coach of the Colts, will bring over. I'm sure Reich is going to have the Super Bowl game plan dusted off for next Thursday night. So it'll be very interesting to see how that game goes, and if the Patriots are 1-3 or 2-2, will also be interesting to see as well. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.